uncomfortable.
Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
I teach my children about systemic racism and about historic and persistent colonialism and the responsibility that comes with their privilege. I will use my voice to speak up, and I will make...
And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock, a few seconds after, and thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Coming up on the show today, in the first hour, you'll hear in the next in a series of not yet aired 2024 Kingston Writers Fest events that happened in the fall. You'll hear Anne Young and Ashley Ala Young in an event called War, Refuge, and Revolution. In the second hour, you'll hear yet another Kingston Writers Fest event, and this one featured Armand Garnot Ruffo and Roxana Spicer in a conversation called Snipers and Spies. Just my usual start of the hour announcement that's occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And a second announcement, and usually my end of the hour announcement, because I won't be able to announce it. Or yeah, I will. I'll be able to do that. I take that back. This is a little bit shorter segment today. Both of these almost absolutely fill the hour, though. So I'll mention that later. Anyway, let's go ahead and just move straight into it. With that said, again, going back to September of 2024 for the Kingston Writers Fest Festival, from their listing for the event, you're going to hear again Anne Young and Ashley Ali Young, and in an event called War, Refuge, and Revolution. Let's go ahead and here we go.
More space at the table.
Weren't aware that you were here, this is where you are. My name is Kimberly Falk, and I am the treasurer of the board of directors for Kingston Writers Fest, and I'm very pleased to present War, Refuge, and Revolution. Kingston Writers Fest acknowledges that Kingston remains on the traditional territory of the Huron-Wendat, Anishinaabe, and Haudenosaunee Confederacy. These indigenous peoples called this land home before the arrival of settlers and still call it home today. We acknowledge the presence of these nations and other First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who share this land today. We are grateful to live and work here and acknowledge our responsibility to peaceably share and honor the land, water, and skies of this territory. And now I'm pleased to introduce Ashley Yaleyun. Ashley Yaleyun is a Vietnamese-Canadian filmmaker based in Montreal. Her directing credits include A Time to Swim in 2017, Space Explorers, Moonrise on the ISS in 2023, and other award-winning documentaries. Please welcome Ashley Yaleyun.
Hi. I am here as a moderator, but I'm also here as my dad's daughter. My dad is the writer. Actually, let's welcome him on the stage as well. Hi, Neil. So my dad recently wrote this book, Dear Yatle, and Yatle is my name, so he wrote it partly in the form of letters to me. And during this panel, I will also talk about and show you a sneak peek of a film that I'm working on about it as a response to his book. And just to let everybody know, we are filming, it's mostly just us, but if you're concerned about incidentally being in the shot, then I would suggest being towards the back of the book, and we definitely won't see you then. But so the way that we're doing the panel today is that we will do two short readings with a discussion, and I invite you to be part of the discussion. And then I will show a little research demo, and then talk about that, and we'll have it open up for questions. But basically, yeah, there's going to be questions along the way. Sounds good. Oh yes, that is clear. Okay.
That's my name is An Jung. Jung with the Y, not the D, the same as Yale.
Oh, it's pronounced as if there's a Y instead of a D.
And this is her name, but also my village name. Yeah, so that's maybe you need to know that.
He's going to start reading one of the first letters.
Yeah, so this is, I wrote the memoir in form of some of the letter, four letters to my daughter. And this is the first letter.
Having trouble with that?
Yeah.
It's in a real way?
Dear Yale, we are a father and a daughter, but communication between us is challenging. You are not fluent in Vietnamese. Why English is not my native language? The difficulty is not only about the languages, but also the narrative itself. The journey of my youth is long, complicated, and hard to relay in words. This complication will trigger the wounds I have kept buried for years. That is why I refer to write. It gives me time to retrieve and relive my many suppressed and forgotten memories. I have also needed time to distance myself from the events, to heal the pain of hiding my past, and to keep my emotion in check. My long-held burden of silence needs to be released slowly. Like any refugee or newcomer to Canada, I have to work twice as hard as my colleagues to be on the same level as theirs. At home, I always needed to catch up on my work, so I had no time left for you and your brother. Whenever you ask me about the war, I say I would tell you later, but I never did. Once I opened my eyes, many decades have passed, and you two had left home. You had grown up, and your mom and I have become empty nesters and moved to the U.S. for a time as expats. Several years back, when we talked about you going to rallies and protesting as McGill, you told me I have become a happy-at-home person with a good job, living in a big house with a lovely family, but knew nothing about student living condition. Yes, I know nothing about student living condition in Canada. I know best what the student life is like in a war zone in Vietnam, or what a student uprising during the Iranian Revolution looks like. I bet you don't know all about those, because I haven't told you. Like many, I did something in my youth that I don't want anyone to know about. I've been waiting for the right time to tell you of those years. Like you, I left home as a teenager when I was no longer there. I dearly miss my brief childhood in the village of Yale. During a rare short period of peace between French colonization and the Vietnam War. Even though I ran away from the village, I could not get the war out of me. My mind never actually leave home. Yale is still part of who I am forever. Do you see a paradox? On the one hand, I have already let you know, remind me where I was from, since I gave you the name of my birthplace. On the other hand, I have kept quiet about my youth. Even though I never told you, you and your brother always remind me of my village and the war. Sometimes I act like I am still living in Yale. Yale, you want to know about the village of Yale, the Vietnam War, and how I come here. Those are not only significant part of my past, but it also your own root and part of your identity. I understand you feel you have two different versions of yourself, but not in conflict or belong to you. You want to ridicule who you are, but you can look at the history book, seeing the conquerors and the mighty have written them from their point of view. The North, the conqueror, write the war story you read, and the mighty American footage, the war movies you watch. Your identity is not in either one. You are not refugee, but your parents are. I'm no historian, but I can transport you back in time to experience your area through the eyes of a young boy who come of age in the war zone. Lopa.
Thank you. And this is our first time presenting this project ever, so thank you, Kingston. So why did you want to write this book? Why did you want to write to me, and do you feel like it's been able to help you through any emotions, or has it been just harder?
Yes, and you remember when you go back to Vietnam to see my village, and I realized that you want to know about your root and why I left the village. So I decided I want to let you know about my childhood and the incident that changed my life. I hope this book will help the second Vietnamese generation to understand about the war, why their parents have to leave Vietnam, either by boat or by any means. So that is my purpose to write.
Okay. I actually was thinking that between them, we could actually even have, if anybody's interested, an audience question. So if anybody has any questions, you're welcome to put up your hand at a certain point. Yes. I think there's a microphone coming to you. When you left, thank you very much. That's very moving. When you left your village, how did you travel and where did you go to first?
Yes, I left my village when I was 15 years old. So first I went to the city, Hue. And from there, I went to Saigon. And from Saigon, I got a scholarship to go to Iran to study. And that scholarship from the Shah of Iran. Yeah.
What was the language of instruction? You had to learn Farsi?
Some course in Farsi, but again, mostly in English. So, yeah, the language instruction in English. And most professors from the University of Southern California. Yeah.
Thank you.
For those who haven't read the book yet, could we get a little bit of a timeline for Vietnam, when you were born, how the war was impacting your particular region throughout your youth?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I was born in 1975.
You're not born in 1975.
No.
1952.
I was born in 1953. Sorry.
Just like me.
Yeah. Yeah, getting old, so. So a year before the end of French, yes. So I have a short brief of childhood. But the war, Vietnamese war came in 65.
So you were in the north?
From central Vietnam, from city of Hue. That is the old capital of Vietnam, where the king can rule and both north and south.
Yes.
So it only about 60 kilometers from the DMZ, the divide between the north and the south. So that's why Hue becoming very, a lot of fighting took place there. Yes. So, and then I left Vietnam in 1975. To go to Iran, and then the Iran revolution started 1978.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And then I applied to go to U.S., but the American embassy took over by Iranian student, and so I the Canada embassy sponsored me to go to Canada, but at that time they are on process to take some American diplomat to U.S.
The Canadian Keeper is called.
Yeah. So that is the
timeline.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think that maybe we should move on to, if you wanted to do a second reading, and then we'll do the video teaser. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have more time for questions after.
Okay, it's taking place during the war. That's when I about 14 years old. Yeah, so it's very young. A few nights after I had marched into the jungle with the rice supply and brought the ammunition back to the village, I again went out for another adventure at night. I followed the village with a pickaxe on my shoulder and a curved knife on my right hand. The work took place in the dark, but tonight was not that dark. I could see my hands I wasn't going to kill anybody. The new authority had ordered us to demolish the basement of Route 1 and to erect some road blockage on it. The purpose was to cut off any reinforcement from Phu Bai base or the South Vietnam government to trap troops in Hue. Viet Cong wanted to isolate the city from the rest of the country, and Gia Le were at the front lines. The villagers walked in silence, and the sound of metal striking asphalt were loud. Each time the stone hit the road surface, tiny sparks flew up in the curve like fireflies play hide and seek under dark sky. I climbed up the hill to help carry tree trunk for blockage. While climbing, I saw a couple of local VC. One of them is my classmate. On his shoulder was not a bamboo machine gun, but an AK-47, a real one. It could kill over a dozen people in a minute. And as I pass him, I say hello. He looked at me with a cold expression, even though we are transient. We had last seen his older few months ago. I look a little pale, and were acting more mature than his age. I knew Lai would lie me like gun. I wonder whether one of the reasons he joined VC was to own a deadly machine gun. Suddenly I heard the noise of flying artillery heading towards us. A whizzing sound, whiz, whiz. I could tell that motor was going to drop nearby. I rolled down into the ditch along the roadside, landing in a torn bush, and yet I didn't feel a thing. Protected by the surf, I settled in the side of the ditch. Lot more artillery fire and follow, explosion after explosion, the earth trembled beneath my back and my ears ran. I thought of our family. I thought about how I might not get home that night. The bombardment seemed to last forever. When explosion burst, I was unsure if I still alive. I felt some pinching on my shoulders and back. Had I been injured, hit by shrapnel, I tried to ignore the pain. Once the thunder artillery restarted, the pain disappeared. I have been so lucky. The first artillery shell hadn't exploded when it hit ground. If it had, more of us might not have survived. I went home without any tune. I left them behind. Mom was waiting behind the door with the kerosene lamp in her hand. Are you all right? She asked. I smiled. Yes, I'm okay, Mom. She looked at my right arm. Oh, you are injured. She grinned. I looked down. There was some black spot on my shirt. Blood and some torn was sticking on my right arm and back. My mom pulled them one by one out. It hurt, but torn in your body are much better than shrapnel from exploded cannons. She anointed the wound with the oil I could feel her relief, as if she had lifted the big rock that had been crushed her. I went to bed, but sleep didn't come, and when it came, it cut short. I was awakened in the early hour of the morning by explosion. Later that day, the newcomer, two of my distant cousins, Du and Mok, had died. A landmine had blown up them when they tried to remove one of the road barriers. The U.S. Marine had made some village clear them in early morning before any convoy come. The villagers put the block up. The villagers removed it. Villagers die. The victim of this time were around my age. A few months they would have been 15, and two of them were only child of my second uncles. I felt even more depressed and confused over whether I could still be alive tomorrow. If I were killed, I would be just one of more victims in crossfire. For now, my desire, if any, was simply to survive, to live another date. Thank you.
I was thinking while you were writing this, that reading, that this is very, you know, difficult memories. How did you psychologically write about it? If you were, I'm sure there's people who want to write their stories, perhaps, would you have advice for if you're writing about things that are quite challenging memories?
Yes. I just have known that I have tried to hide my trauma, because I thought the time will heal, but it not. When I opened up, I want to talk to you as they come back. And it's very hard to write at the beginning. So after some try, I learned that if I can thinking about, that's not my trauma, but someone else, like a kiss in the war zone. Or for example, when I saw on TV the fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan, I saw the kids who had more trauma than my own. So by third person, look at older people, older kids survive, I think I can write more better. And when I relieved that, my emotional practice disappeared. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think before we do questions of the audience, maybe we will show the video clip. Unless you want to talk about something first?
Up to you.
Up to me? Okay. Well, I guess there's one thing that, you know, I get, we already touched upon it, is the Iran section. And I think one thing that when I first read the book I was surprised about was that there's a lot of strange and humorous things that happen in your book too.
Yes.
Like how you survived on the streets of Iran by drawing street portraits, and there's just all these really interesting details. And I guess it's just like I learned a lot about you through reading this book that I never expected. I also saw how, you know, you went through so many different situations by yourself. You were it seemed kind of a lonely story because you're traveling a lot by yourself. And I can see now why you always want to have mom and me with you everywhere. because you knew what it was like to be away from your family, or to lose your family once. So thank you for writing the book. We're going to go back to questions about the book, but maybe for now, to give context, I will show you some. It's very early. It's not going to be what the documentary looks like, and we're really lucky today because I have some people on my team, like my amazing producer and my cinematographer here, who's going to... We're in the early stages of the process, and then we're going to film more in Vietnam coming up, but just to show my dad and you some research footage. And I think we'll need to move so that so that we're not in the way of the screen. Because she shows her emotion very clearly. Whereas my dad often, he's mostly a grunter. He barely speaks at all.
You know, at that time, all I care is that I believe in them. Either alive or dead, I just want to leave that place.
Not only our generation get all the goodness from leaving Vietnam, but my offspring, like you and David, you both have a good, beautiful life, and we very appreciate that.
Thank you for going through all that difficulty. Our life, this is our boat story. We just do pleasure boats in the weekends.
Do you feel want to go to the ground?
I'm curious about it. Okay, I tell you that and Mom some news. I got an artist residency in Vietnam.
Oh, that is not a good news for us.
So here I am in Vietnam looking for a family story. And guess what? Out of the blue, Dad just emails it to me. I drafted his memoir, conveniently typed out in English. I guess the biggest surprise was that he writes about the Iranian Revolution. Like, of course I knew he experienced the Vietnam War, but he had never before mentioned to me that he lived in Iran, let alone during, you know, a revolution. He writes it as a series of letters to me and calls it Dear Yatle. And my name is Yatle. I'm named after his childhood village. Now he wants to publish the memoir, and I know it's going to be challenging for him.
Because you seem a little bit stuck in not being able to write emotionally or about relationships. So maybe doing some kind of creative exercises could help. Mm-hmm.
My plan is to film recreations of scenes from Dad's memoir. But I want to do it in Yatle Village, working with Dad, Mom, Grandmother, and other relatives. It's a way for us to talk because every story has different sides. I know that's going to be loaded, but
everybody seems up for it, so here we go. Now my dad's moderating.
Okay, so you have made a lot of film already, but why you did not ask me about Vietnam? Even you asked, I say, I not tell you, but my question is why you did not ask. And now you decide to make the theme when I send you the manuscript.
Your question is why did I not ask you about the Vietnam War?
Yes.
I think it's because I think I didn't know to ask because you kind of think your parents aren't that interesting. You think that they're, but you don't realize they have all these stories. And also I think once you finally told me a bit about it, and I first read letters that he sent me, you know, quite a few years ago, but I didn't feel ready to work on this project. I wanted to make sure that it was something where it wouldn't affect our relationship, because whenever you work on a project, maybe there's creative differences, maybe there's different challenges. So I wanted to make sure that I was mature enough to work on this project. And I think that I don't know if that answers your question.
Partially?
I guess I waited for you to tell me, because this is also a very complex story, and the way that I want to tell it is quite complex, where we are, doing these, we're going to film scenes of my dad's memoir, but we're also doing it not just to see those scenes, but as a way of creating a space for conversation, for especially, between Canada and people in Vietnam who we haven't really been in touch with very much.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so after this, do you have other questions about this?
No, I maybe ask the audience to have any question.
So I guess we're going to have a bit of Q&A and then...
Hi, thank you for sharing your story. I have a question for your father. I'm wondering if you've met up with or seen any other survivors from your village since the war?
Yes, I met some. But most of my classmates, become, VC, the dweller, and most of them die, but some survive, become the big person in Vietnam. They have a lot of power. Yes.
There was a scene in the little mini teaser film. Was that your grandmother, Ashley, and your
yes, that was my grandmother.
Your dad. Can you talk a bit about your grandmother and your mother? Both of you talk about her and how a little bit more about her story.
Well, my mom's story, I'll let her tell it another day. But my parents met in Calgary, in Canada. And she has an amazing story too, but that's another film, another book.
I should mention that I'm not both people, but my wife is both people. So she have a story different mind,
And it's for her to tell, yeah.
And her to tell. So I did not touch on her part on that.
And yes, my grandmother is in Vietnam. She's a very strong, funny, interesting woman.
Yes, she now is 92 years old.
I thought Yeah. I see a question there. You? Yes?
Me?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for these fascinating projects. Like, it's really interesting to see this sort of artistic back and forth happening. My question's for Ashley Yale. What I wanted to hear what it's like receiving a packet like this, and like what it's like to sort of, it feels like you want to sort of make real, make coherent, like make into, make legible this history in all these different ways, like even before the packet arrives. And like, I wonder about the impulse to be like, let's make art together about that. Let's work together on that. So I just wanted to give you a chance to sort of talk about what it's like to be the receiver of something like this.
Yeah. I guess the first time I read his book, there were a lot of sections that I was very moved by. Like I said before, about there was a lot of things where I'm like, oh, maybe that's why he's the way he is, or and I think that that was very meaningful for me. And also just not knowing any of these stories, just never hearing any of these stories. I didn't even know that, like I said in the trailer, that he lived in Iran before, even though that was a big part of his life. And it's funny because I asked my dad, like, why didn't you ever tell me any of this? And he just said kind of like, I can ask him again. Maybe he has a different answer. Why did you not tell me about Iran or all these other stories?
Because a lot of, different opinion in group for Vietnam, Vietnamese diaspora, and also Iranian diaspora. It's very hard to open up because my story is very long, a lot of explanation. You cannot say something and then can be a misunderstanding and you'll be in trouble. So that's the reason why I keep it quiet for maybe 30 years. And the community become more liberal, we can open up and talk. And that's one of the reasons why.
So next year is the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. Do you think now, like, why do you think it's important to share the stories now?
Yes, that's one of the reasons. It's a half a century passed. And we need to tell something is really happened in Vietnam, so the next generation can understand a reason why their parents have left Vietnam.
Do you think it's time yet that, you know, you're talking about how your friends who are Viet Cong, and there's a lot of there's not a lot of closeness, but we're going, like, I want to go back to Vietnam and film, so do you think it's time to maybe reconnect with your relatives in Vietnam and, you know, put the past behind and kind of heal from some conflicts?
For you, it's more easy because they have distinguished between, you know, you are born in Vietnam or you're not born in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And when you're born in Vietnam, so you have some rule applied to you. But if you're not, you have become foreigner, it's more opener, easy for you to contact. And yeah.
Okay.
Yes?
Do you fear for your safety returning to Vietnam, and how these BC former classmates of yours would act towards you?
No, I don't think that now is a problem now, because everybody now more understandable. So I don't see that is the real problem. Yeah, but you don't know.
Yes, I'm just wondering if you and your wife are both from Vietnam and are around the same area, but you met in Calgary. Like, are you from the same?
No, she from Saigon. Now they call it Ho Chi Minh City. In the south, I in the central, yeah. And but we are both from South Vietnam, yeah. And she come here as a boat people, refugee from boat. And I'm here, the refugee from Iran. Yeah, so it's a little different there.
I have a very good friend who is from Vietnam. And she told me her story. She came in a boat with her little sister, and they ran out of food and water when they were in the boat. And so there was a shelter, a cloth shelter, and the rain would come and it would drop the drops of water in, and she had a handkerchief which she got wet. And she squeezed the water into her sister's mouth. That was one of her stories. I haven't heard many of them. She came to, I think, Montreal, and her immigration was processed there, and then she came to Kingston, and she went to classes for English as a second language, and she wrote little vignettes of which she has given me to read, and I quite enjoyed it. And I keep saying to her, why don't you publish this? She's retired now, and I think she has lots of time, but she keeps saying, I'm not ready. I just wondered what the journey for you was to write your book. It seemed like it took quite a while. And how did you get it? No, what was the publisher? Was that someone easy to find? Or what was that process?
Yes, for us, it's not easy to find a publisher. It's very difficult. For me, as in my memoirs, talking a lot about, I got a lot of lucky break. And this is one of my lucky break. That is, the publisher is willing to publish, to buy the manuscript. So for her, she had tried and to find some connection so that she can complete the book.
Okay, thank you.
And it was, like, I asked my dad earlier whether or not he wants to write another book, and maybe he will, but he was saying that, you know, there was a lot of learning that had to happen to write this story, which it's great that to see my dad have all these different lives, you know, Vietnam, Iran,
and then
a whole successful career as an engineer in Calgary, and then now, after retirement, a whole new debuting today as a writer. So it's inspiring to see you go through all these different stages.
Yes.
Do you remember a specific moment where your mindset shifted from being able to talk about your experiences? Because I know that you said that you couldn't even talk about your trauma with your daughter. Was there like a moment in time that you remember feeling like, oh, okay, I have to do it, or I want to do it, if that makes sense?
Yes, I mentioned before. That's when she went back to Vietnam, to Gia Le. my hometown and also her name after. And that time I realized that, you know, she need to know. I cannot hide much longer. So that I start from that.
Could you share with us some of the stories that you would like to film? You talk about wanting to go back to film some of the stories. Are you going to do it as a docudrama kind of filming, or and can you share what those stories are that you feel are most important to tell?
Well, I think that the spine of this film will, you know, follow my dad, hopefully, who will come with me, and my mom too, if she's willing, I don't know, to Vietnam, where they haven't been for a long time. And we're going to film in the locations that some of these stories take place. But also, Vietnam's a very different place now. His family still lives in the same village, so we'll be reconnecting with some of my aunts and uncles and hearing their side of the story too, because my dad's story is from his point of view, but it could be, you know, I think help with everybody to understand everybody's point of view. And yeah, I hope that answers your question.
The specifics of the stories that you want to tell.
The specifics of the stories.
Yeah.
I think, well, there's different scenes that from the book that I'm really interested in. For instance, there's a scene where my dad decides to leave his village and he is shot at in the rice paddies of his field. So that is one that is very interesting to me, because it's a moment where there was a change in his life and he decides he needs to go. There's many different stories that are important in his book, but I think I am expanding the conversation with the documentary by thinking about kind of what healing can happen 50 years later.
Hi. I'm just wondering, sometimes we tell people or we hear people talk about the idea that it's easier to write about an experience than it is to talk about it. And I'm wondering whether, I know this is the first time perhaps you're discussing it in this format, but I'm wondering whether you find there is a difference. Is it easier to, was it easier for you to write about this rather than discuss it or talk about it, or is there no difference between that?
After this, so many years, and I opened up my stories, I mean, 10 years already, with that time, I feel very comfortable to talk. It's not the same as before. I try to not to see any or talk any fighting or something like that. But again, it is not easy, because you see every day on the TV the fighting from everywhere, and that's what happened, and it's very hard. But now it's more open now, so.
I also think it's interesting that, you know, a lot of films and books that I've read about the Vietnam War are either from, you know, American filmmakers or American writers or the diaspora, who then reinterpret their parents' stories for them because they have the, you know, like an English background or something. But you didn't have a writing background, and you did not have, like, English is not your first language. So we had a lot of conversations at the beginning where you're like exploring the form of writing, where you're thinking about oh, should it be in third person or first person? Or you got really excited about like this one thing that you were going to do in the story.
Yes.
And I was like, Dad, there's a word for it. It's called a metaphor. So I really love how you just threw yourself into learning a whole new discipline with this book. And your voice comes out really clearly in the book. And it's a unique voice. It's different than a lot of the voices you read.
Yes. It's not easy. To write it is easy, but how to form it into the memoir so people can read. So from beginning, I have to learn what type of genre I have to follow. Whether I use it memoir or a fiction, history fiction, or maybe auto fiction. So I have tried into that form and see which one is go best. So because when you write, you have some name, some people can recognize, and that may be not good because of the political stuff. So I try to do a fiction. It's more easier than the memoir, because the memoir is real, what happened. And I don't want to hurt some older people. So I try to do that. But later I try to put in composite character and try to make the people cannot recognize. So when I sent to one of the editor, and the editor told me it's better to be in the memoir instead of autofiction, because in Canada nobody know what is autofiction. in French it's very common in French, but in Canada,
I'm being told that we're out of time.
Yes.
But maybe you could. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that is. So I had to try different form to come up with this memoir, and that is what it happened. Come up today. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, and thanks to all the people who brought us here.
And you just heard from a 2024 Kingston Writers Fest event called War, Refuge, and Revolution. You heard An Young and Ash and his daughter, Ashley Yale Young, in an event, again, called War and Refuge and Revolution. It is almost 58 minutes after 4 o'clock. Let's do this, and I will be right back.
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.
Keep up with what's hot on CFRC Airwaves. Find us today on Instagram and Facebook. Follow us at CFRC Music and keep your finger on the pulse of Kingston's best music mix.
And again, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And again, like I do every week, just a reminder that every week, both hours of my show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years, and they usually get those uploaded about 7 o'clock in the evening after the show. If I don't have any problems, I get it in there. Just so you know, if you happen to go to that space and they're not in there after 7 o'clock, it's either I had another event to go to or and didn't get home, or am having a bit of a problem, and we'll try to get them uploaded as quickly as I can. And yeah. And